His intellect matches his wit. His delivery and his pop culture references challenge audiences to follow his thoughts to the rewarding conclusions. He's a comedian, actor, writer, political commentator, former Weekend Update anchor on Saturday Night Live. He is Dennis Miller. Dennis, it's great to have you on the show today.
Scoot, 1 second. Let me check to make sure I turned the iron off for the 53rd time today. I have ADD, OCD. I'm constantly changing what I'm completely obsessed with. How are you today, my friend?
I'm great. I want to tell you about the first hour of our show today, which was inspired by me going back and doing research on you, getting ready for the interview today. And it occurred to me that something that you said, I think this was in the 93, 94, in one of your specials, you said that, why do we get so hung up on little things? We look at the world around us and we think it's a madhouse. We've lost control. We're scared. So we take all these little things and make them bigger than they naturally are because we can control those things. I have OCD, and to me, that was a classic symptom of obsessive compulsive disorder. And when I think about how America gets so wrapped up in things like kneeling for the national anthem, taking down Confederate monuments, it's almost as if we try to control those things because of all the other things we can't control. And that thought was inspired by you.
Well, all I can say is I've suffered from OCD in various degrees throughout my life, and I tried to figure it out at one point. It's all built on fear of as you said, not being able to control the cosmic. So you micromanage the zhoon. And I would think, why do I have songs stuck in my head for a long time? And I thought, the only thing that I can say is trying to forget the song is what's keeping it in my head. Hmm. And I remember thinking the way to do this, to counteract it, is to sit down and say, all right, I'm dedicating my life to thinking of this song for the rest of my life. And then after 10 minutes, you're laughing at yourself. Yeah. You're thinking, I can't do that. So I think OCD is, built on staying in close to Joe Frazier so you can catch solar plexus punches, but he can't get the left on your jaw. That's what I think OCD is.
From Saturday Night Live and your position as anchor on Weekend Update to your specials like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, they shoot HBO specials, don't they, and Black and White, one of my favorites, I always perceived you as being liberal, or at least really strongly left-leaning. And then you become a regular on Bill O'Reilly on the Fox News Channel, and I think, okay, has this guy totally evolved and become a conservative voice? When I went back and saw some of your early stuff, you were always very much a moderate. Mm-hmm. You were very much a moderate.
Yeah, I don't know how you get pegged, but once you're lucky to get pegged, so I don't fight with people about it. But I watched an old special where I hosted a young comedian special. I said, it's the same me. I've always been a pragmatist. I'd like to keep half my money, and I don't trust radical Islam as far as I can throw it. Outside of that, I'm very liberal. Somehow, though, the times change, and you get shot through a different prism where they now believe that you're some right-wing fanatic. But like you said, I know those old specials. I wrote them. It's kind of the same approach.
And I want to mention that you have a new show. It's going to be in Baton Rouge at LeBaire's Casino on Saturday, February the 9th. It's Fake News, Real Jokes. I can't wait. I'm going to be there. I'm looking forward to actually meeting you. Has there ever been a better time to blur the line between politics and pop culture?
And by the way, Scoot, if you don't have ducats, call Jeff and I'll take care of him for you. If you want to come to somebody, let him know and I'll take care of him.
All right.
Let's see. There's been easier times to blur it. It's a war zone out there right now. People hate you completely if you deviate one thing everybody has like a agenda bucket list in their head. And if you deviate one stroke from that, they're pissed off at you. So, there's been easier times. But guess what? It kind of works for me because I'm 65. Man, if you're still kissing ass to be liked by strangers at 65, you've missed the point of the journey, right? I am what I am. I hate to get all Popeye about it, but what are you going to do? This is what I believe. I solicit the approbation of strangers? I'm not Scarlett O'Hara. I'm Dennis Miller.
You, in an HBO special, mid-90s, you made fun of Bill Clinton. You also made fun of his predecessor, George H.W. Bush. Does historical perspective ever make you regret things you've said about people on stage?
No. Jesus. I don't know. I don't know about you, but the things that I've said in my life can often change in an afternoon, much less 20 or 30 years. These people say, I saw something you said 25 years ago, and it's different now. You want to say?
Yeah.
I hope you can put one foot in front of the other and get on with your day. But guess what? My life changes as I learn more stuff, as I get more perspective. As they say, if you're not liberal when you're young, you're heartless. And if you're not more of a conservative when you're older, you're clueless. That's the way I feel about it. I've led a life. I've got some knowledge. And as far as people in power goes, once you're the court jester, you always make fun of people in power. That's your job. You just have to bridle up against that line and make sure you don't make it too serious or they send you out and behead you. So, I've always made fun of the president. That's just my job.
I was intrigued and almost haunted in some ways by some of the things in your 93 special live from Washington, D.C. And you were talking about the activist people wearing furs. And you said, I feel like the number one endangered species in this country is someone who retains their freedom of choice. I have nothing against these fur people. These fur people are going to have to get it through their heads that personal likes and dislikes are just opinions and not the law of the land. How important and relevant is that today?
Well, let's just say this. Over the course of my life, I've noticed that anti-fur activists are more interested in accumulating pelts than people who wear fur. And that irony is not lost on me. I could care less what other people want to do with their life. I'm trying to influence my life, my kids, and be a good husband. Everybody else can go their own way. I don't rule them out of my life because they believe differently than me. I don't reflexively rule them into my life if they agree with me. Human beings are intricate creatures. They call them snowflakes. I believe it's way beyond that. It's a multifaceted organism that I can't go around and say, do they think exactly like I do? And thus I judge them by that. Everybody can do their own thing. When it occurs on my thing periodically, I will cut somebody out of my life. But as I get older, I notice I'm getting softer because I now actually mourn the loss of people I've pronounced dead to me.
You describe yourself as shy when you were young, but you saw Robin Williams in the late 70s and you decided that's something that you wanted to do. What did it take for that shy kid to get on stage and do stand-up for the first time?
I wrote a couple jokes. I was doing them on stage in Pittsburgh, and a comedian, his name's unimportant, but he came through and he liked the jokes and he bought them. And I was sitting at home in my $60 a month apartment watching him on The Tonight Show, and he told one of the jokes, and Johnny Carson put his head down on his forearm and pounded the desk. And I thought, geez, I thought of that. I better become the conduit because I'm not built to sit here alone in this apartment broke and watch somebody make Johnny Carson laugh. So that's what made a shy kid learn how to be the conduit for his own jokes.
I'm amazed at the fluidity of your comic prose with obscure baby boomer pop culture references that I think are a fun challenge to audiences. Man, how long does it take you to prepare to do an hour of those?
If I really sat down and wanted to do it quickly, I could do it in 2 months, I think. For the price of my life, when I just accumulate things, I'd say from start to finish, I can do one in 10 months. But it's more about, I don't know, I used to carry a tape recorder. Now everybody has their phone. You notice 10 things a day. You put them on the phone. You go back and listen to them at the end of a month. You've probably got five interesting ones, and you tailor four good jokes out of that. You do that over the course of a year, 10 months, and, you probably have enough jokes to do an hour. So it's a process I could amplify if I wanted to, but I don't want to because I'd like my lope to be more laconic than that.
One thing that seems to run through many of your shows is your reference to airline travel, and you really have some great observations about that.
Well, you sit on enough of those planes and watch how mindless it is, and you can do two things. You can wing walk and get out of there, and that's dangerous. Or you can sit down and write cranky jokes about it. So I would always view my time on a plane when things would just seem so mindless. I'd say, well, tear it up, brother. You've got time on your hands here. Tear it up for 4 hours.
I love the line about it. When did stewardesses get so, well, at the time, stewardesses, when did they get so old? I mean, they make the Supreme Court look like temps. So you've just done a great job of it.
I remember that. I'll show you how different times it is. Now that the end of the world as we know it. Then people used to just laugh. I thought it was better then.
Are you still in contact with Bill O'Reilly? How's he doing?
I talked to Bill, let me see, maybe around a month ago. Seemed good. I don't think he's eager for the fray as much. Yeah. I think he's got a lovely kids, and he's enjoying his time. I think he does a podcast. I called him to say, listen, when you do your podcast, either wear a collared shirt or wear a sweater with a collared shirt, but don't wear a V-neck sweater with no shirt. You look like you're collecting for the mob. And, so, you know, listen, I don't know Bill O'Reilly as well as some people would assume I do. His private life's his private life. But I can say over the years, I saw him be very kind with his time and money to soldiers who had been hurt and young children who had been compromised. So like all humans, there's sides there I'm not privy to, nor do I want to be. But there's other sides that I saw that were I thought they were admirable.
You have a podcast. Talk about that.
Well, listen, I was doing 3 hours a day for 8 years. And at the end of the 8 years, I was noticing after 5 days a week, 15 hours, I was starting to light up callers. You must have something like this. I thought, oh, my God, I'm turning into the cranky guy. I've got people calling in my show, and I'm lighting them up. I felt like Dick Vermeil when he coached the Eagles. I said, I just need a year off. So I quit and do the podcast. And the podcast is like 45 minutes. I can't tell you how easy it seems. It's like swinging a heavier bat in the on-deck circle. Once you do 45 minutes a day or 2 days a week, it seems so easy. So at this point in my life, I'm content with that.
And it's Dennis Miller Option.
Yeah, it's got on Westwood One now. I was on Podcast One, but our relationship was after a year. I decided to go to Westwood One. And I'm doing two next Tuesday. I think they'll be putting them up soon. I don't know that whole world that much, but I know they're on Apple.
I enjoyed our conversation. Dennis Miller's new show is Fake News, Real Jokes.
You're a good cat. Are you coming to the show?
Yeah, I'm coming to the show.
All right. Well, like I said, Jeff Abraham's my publicist. Call him. I'll wire the tickets, and I'll see you backstage, brother.
Awesome.
I appreciate your time today.
Man, listen.
Again, this is Wilkes-Barre, right?
I enjoy it. What? Yeah, right. Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Yeah, exactly.
I'm just saying, it's nice to see an apostrophe being used in the right way as opposed to the wasteoid that is Alexander Ocasio-Cortez. The Ministry of Punctuation called her and said, we want our hyphen back.
I'm in admiration of your wit and your intellect. You'll be at LeBerge Casino in Baton Rouge Saturday, February the 9th. Tickets are on sale now. Dennis, thanks for the time.
All right.
All right. Dennis Miller.